Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And I am joined by the number one New York Times bestselling author, Robin Cook, who is out with a brand new novel. This one is called Bellevue. It is available everywhere. It is a medical thriller, horror, suspense. It's all of that. But Robin, as I got the book in the mail, I looked at it, and that name Bellevue, for those of us that aren't from the New York area and have seen it in movies and such and other pop culture, Bellevue just has that connotation of something eerie. Is that sort of what drew you to setting the book there and with this title?
Well, not really. Actually, I studied medicine at Bellevue when I was a medical student. And this was in the mid-60s, or early 60s, actually. And so, for me, the name Bellevue had a very different connotation. But I understand that most people associated the name Bellevue with a psychiatric hospital, and that is because it had a very famous psychiatric division, and that became famous just because of some of the people who happened to be incarcerated in that hospital. But what really stimulated me to write this book was the fact that I noticed that in New York, the psychosomatic hospital, the old Bellevue Hospital, is still there. It's been empty for over 40 years. And how can that still be there? It just doesn't make any sense. It's the most important sort of medical area in New York. And here's this 600-bed hospital empty for 40 years. It hasn't been repurposed, hasn't been torn down, rebuilt, etc., which everything else has in that area. And it just cried out to me. It said, you know, this has to be a book. Here's a haunted house in the middle of New York.
That's an interesting tidbit about that, because I hadn't thought about it, the different way the New York skyline and everything else has changed there, but you'd think that this would be prime real estate. Is it located in a prime real estate area?
Oh, totally. In fact, the reason I kept looking at it was I've written about 14 books about this couple, medical examiner couple, and they work at the New York City Medical Examiner's Office, which is on the corner of First Avenue and 30th Street. And on the opposite corner is this huge, hulking, empty, very mysterious-looking psychiatric hospital. And I kept looking at it every time I went to the medical examiner's office, which I would go quite often, and it just amazes me. It amazed me that it was there. And I've always wanted to write a novel that would have something to do with the history of medicine, so people could understand that, you know, the history of medicine wasn't this upward slant continuously, that it was kind of a sawtooth-type situation. There's a lot of nasty stuff that happened in the history of medicine, and I think that patients should get more credit for adding to the development of medicine. And suddenly, this is the book.
And as I read about this, the book opens and it describes a lobotomy. And there was a very famous case around our area of the country where a fellow confessed to a murder and spent some time in prison back in the 50s up until the early 70s because he had confessed after receiving a lobotomy. And of course, now we have the DSM. I think they're up to the DSM-5 for mental health disorders. But the trajectory of psychoanalysis and psychiatry has not exactly been an upward trend, but as you studied the history of medicine, did you notice peaks and valleys that were, as you look at them now with a 2024 mind as a physician yourself, you look and say, how could this ever have happened?
Exactly. For instance, take something like the advent of anesthesia. What could possibly be better than anesthesia for people facing surgery? And yet, if you go back and you look at it, that back then when it started, there were actually factions. There were groups of doctors who felt that it was wrong. It was wrong to use anesthesia because the pain was something that it was God's work, and that they define it or denying it is somehow against religion. I mean, it's just astounding to think about it. And yet, that's exactly what happened. And that kind of thing happened at Bellevue Hospital, as it did at many hospitals. So this book was just an opportunity for me to deal with some of these issues and deal with it in a fun kind of way. And in fact, what established me as a writer was the interesting combination of medicine and science and thriller aspects. And that's what characterized my book, Coma, which kind of took off and established me as a writer. And in this book, which is my 41st, has the same kind of connotations as Coma in the sense that it has something very unique for me, and that is I take advantage of the supernatural in order to tell the story and to bring these things to life.
This book follows, well, it's not necessarily follows, but it's involves the Fuller family, and it's a generations who've been involved in medicine. But you've got Mitt Fuller, he's starting a surgical residency there at Bellevue Hospital. And as you write, when you were doing your surgical residency, are these the times that you remember everything? Because I'm sure there's been things in your career that you've forgotten and all that, but does every physician remember their surgical residency with a great deal of nostalgia?
Indeed. In fact, the surgical residency, I mean, there's no one that could write this book if they didn't do a surgical residency, because it takes you into what it's like to be in the first few days of your surgical residency. You go from being a medical student, that you always have somebody around supporting you and whatnot, and suddenly the next day you are a surgical resident. And what that means is that your first night on call, you're in the hospital, and you have all these sick people, and suddenly you're on your own. And the worry that you're not capable of really handling this is so acute. And I remember that to this day so clearly. And I put that in this book. And whoever reads this book is going to sort of, in a sense, experience what it's like being a first-year surgical resident those first few days, those first few nights are just terrifying.
I would imagine it's something akin to the first time a police officer goes into a homicide scene, because you can't let your feelings show, but there has to be a certain level of terror that the residents just feel, because maybe not only lives are in their hands, but they're experiencing things that you can't learn from a medical book or from a cadaver, right?
Absolutely, yeah. You can read about it, you can do all that kind of stuff until you're blue in the face, until you're actually there on your own, completely on your own. I mean, if you wanted to have that analogy, it would have to be that the police person would have to be by themselves. Because usually they're in teams, or two people or whatever. And that really makes it different. If you have someone else and you're sharing it, it's very different. But when you're by yourself in a huge hospital with, say, 1,000 patients, well, 1,000, it wouldn't all be surgical patients, but nonetheless, say several hundred or 300 or 400 surgical patients, many of whom just had surgery that day, and you're the only one there. It's an experience that you never forget, and I never forget it. And so I was able to write this book from experience, even though it was a number of years ago when I was a first-year surgical resident.
I'm chatting with Robin Cook about his brand-new novel, Bellevue. It's a medical thriller, horror, mystery, all kinds of stuff wrapped into one. It's available everywhere. Robin, I would guess that the place came for you before the story. So as you set about to write this story and to try to capture it, was this a particular challenge for you to come up with the trajectory of the story to make sure that it made sense and you could utilize all that the setting had to offer? Because it does become a character unto itself.
Well, yeah, it was. It was somewhat difficult for me because writing, I had never included the supernatural in any of my stories. In fact, my stories always were based on, very much on science and medical accuracy. And to go off and be using the supernatural as I've done in this book was really something very different for me. And something I wasn't really attuned to in a lot of ways, but it made so much sense, and so it was a challenge for me, and I was really happy to see how the story would play out and how I could use this to do exactly what I wanted to do, to get people to understand issues about the medicine, history of medicine, etc. But I want people to actually experience this feeling, and so I'm really excited. I'm as excited about this book as I was when Coma came out way back when.
Was the editing process different when you incorporate the supernatural? Because, like you say, that's out of your wheelhouse to write, and so when you take something that you haven't done before, did you learn some things in editing that you hadn't thought about as you just came up with the story in your mind?
You know, the story, strangely enough, with this book, the story in some respects began to tell itself. And I put together the character and the circumstance and some of his experiences and the fact that was this something, when he saw this image at night at 3 o'clock in the morning when he was by himself, is he really seeing it or is he hallucinating? Because first of all, he hasn't had any sleep for so long, he's exhausted, and so he's trying to determine whether he's creating this image or whether he's seeing this image. And it's that kind of confusion that I think all of us would have if we experienced something similar to how I describe it in this book.
When you set about writing, I know you've experienced this with the thrillers that you've written over the years, but to try to make medicine and even the field of psychiatry readable to a layperson, do you have to take great pains, I wouldn't say dumb it down, but to make it readable so it flows so people don't get hung up on a medical word?
You know, I'm very careful about that because I like to use the real language. I like people to really feel like they're there. So I make a lot of effort at not dumbing things down, but in fact making them very realistic, but designing the sentences so that you can actually figure out the meaning of the word without looking them up, even if you've never come in contact with them before. Just by reading the sentence and thinking about it, you can actually determine or figure out the meaning of the word. I've been doing that in my book right from the beginning.
Well, I know about two-thirds of the way through the book, there was a term that came up, and it was thyroid storm. And I remember in my mind reading that word and thinking, what is that? Well, then the next line of the book is, what is that? And so when you incorporate it into the conversation, are those real conversations that happen in the hospital? I mean, you can't know all these, even as a physician, you can't know all the medical terms, right?
Well, those kind of terms you do because they stand out so much in your sense or in your imagination. As I described that episode, which terrifies my main character, it terrifies everybody who thinks about it, even if they've never seen it. And so it's one of those things that I think all of us who study medicine, we're so sort of taken by how the body can react in that way and so go so overboard that I don't know. I had never handled a case of thyroid storm myself, but I had always worried about it.
Well, the flow of the story was terrific, and I'm not trained in medicine, but I followed it so well. The book is called Bellevue. It's the latest medical thriller by Robin Cook. It's available everywhere. If you haven't read Robin's stuff, check it out. Start with Coma. You won't regret that title as well. But this one's Bellevue. Robin, just a fantastic offering here, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.